does not know this song? And for many people, this is what they associate with the name Bobby McFerrin, the amazing voice behind Don't Worry, Be Happy and all those sounds that go behind it. But we're going to talk about something very different with Mr. McFerrin today. We want to talk a little bit about his family and how he came behind to his musical legacy. It's the story of the power of family.
How about that?
And shared history. Bobby McFerrin, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, how are you?
So you're actually in New York this week to pay tribute to your father, who
is
Robert McFerrin.
I'm junior.
You are the junior. Most people don't know he was the first black man to perform at the Metropolitan Opera. He was there just days after Marian Anderson,
That's correct. Who lived in the same apartment building that we did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right.
Was she a noisy neighbor?
Not at all. She's very quiet, very sweet.
But your dad, Robert McFerrin, sang, he was the singing voice of Sidney Poitier in the film version of Porgy and Bess, and we have a little clip of that.
Bess, you is my woman now. You is, and you must laugh and sing and dance for two instead of one.
That is a beautiful sound. That's like pure chocolate
over
the ears. Yeah, he had a gorgeous, gorgeous voice. Years before he performed with the Met, he performed on the stage of the New York City Opera.
City Opera, right.
It was an opera called Troubled Island. The libretto was Langston Hughes, and the music was written by my grandfather, William Grant Still.
How about that?
How about that? We're going to play a little bit. This is kind of sketchy audio. It's from actually a rehearsal, I believe, of the 1949 production with your dad performing in Troubled Island. Story behind this opera, and your dad is a part of this period.
That's funny. I've never heard that clip.
You haven't?
No, I haven't heard it. No, that's wonderful.
Well, this opera was kind of pivotal in a number of different ways. It was written by two black men, not just white. It was the first opera by an African American to be performed by a major company. It prominently featured some African Americans in the lead. But actually, the thing that people may not realize is that most of the people in the cast were white people painted black. The two stars.
Wow.
Robert Weed was a white guy that they put dark makeup on him.
Right.
And so your dad was one of these, he was one of the rare true people of color on the stage.
Well, you know, one thing I remember as a kid growing up is that whoever the black singers were in New York City at the time, they always seemed to congregate in our apartment because the place was always full of black people singing. And it was actually a wonderful experience as a kid sort of hiding under the piano while they'd sing and talk about the opportunities or the lack of opportunities that they had to, you know, perform their art, you know.
We actually found a recording of your dad's spirituals.
Did you really?
We did. Let's play it for you here.
I got to lie down. How shall I rise? Got to lie down. How shall I rise? I got to lie down. How shall I rise? Pit before the judgment bar. I got to lie down. How shall I rise? Got to lie down. How shall I rise? I got to lie down. How shall I rise? Pit before the judgment bar. Dark was the night and cold the ground on which my Lord was laid. Great drops of sweat like blood ran down. In agony he prayed, I got to lie down. How shall I rise? Got to lie down.
You know this song?
I do, well, yeah.
Did you ever sing it with your dad?
No, I never. Well, no, that's not true. One time we did. My sister, my mother, my dad, myself did a concert in St. Louis, I think in 1986. And it was just a one-time deal. It was my dad was the featured artist, and the rest of us were just sort of
on the bill. You were the backup singers for the famous Robert McFerrin.
That's right, yeah.
Well, you went a very different way in your style of music. What do you think you took away from your dad?
Oh, first off, just good singing, just good technique, and just how to really approach a song, a piece of music. He believed that if you are a singer, you've been given a gift. You know, God has entrusted you with a gift, and you need to do everything that you can, first off, to take care of yourself, not only your voice, but yourself, because yourself was your instrument. Your body was your instrument. Your mind is your instrument. Your spirit is a big part of your instrument. And to this day, when I sing, in many ways, I feel like I'm praying, you know.
I sat across from your dad when he was being inducted into the Arkansas Hall of Fame, and he was a sweet, humble, soft-spoken man. I'm just wondering how you felt growing up I guess, under his shadow. I mean, he was famous.
Well, you know, I think that's why it took me 27 years to figure out that I was a singer, because I was, he was this incredible vocalist, and I wanted to do something else. And so I decided on composition, you know, being a composer and a pianist. And what's really funny is that the whole time that I was playing piano, I never felt like I was really a pianist. You know, I always had this nagging suspicion that wasn't my instrument. And then just one day out of the blue, it just fell on me that I'm a singer, and I started working right away. It's really amazing. I got an audition at a piano bar. I was living in Salt Lake City at the time, and I sang 5 songs. I was hired. I started a month later.
What'd you sing?
One of the songs was You Are the Sunshine of My Life, Stevie Wonder. Another one was a tune by a band called Blind Faith. Come down off your throne and leave your body alone. Somebody must change. And then I sang a tune by Joan Armatrading called Opportunity. Opportunity came to my door.
Did you do that when you were auditioning?
When I was down on my luck. No. I don't think I did. No.
When did you start doing the percussive things and, well, the other stuff with your voice? How did it meld into that?
You know, in the beginning, I wasn't really sure what kind of singing I was going to do, if I was going to continue to do piano bars, though I didn't think so. I thought maybe I might be a jazz singer and have a band. And I even thought about, you know, maybe doing the sort of the singer with the Count Basie kind of band, you know, and do some Joe Williams and stuff like that. You know, I wasn't too sure. But the idea of being on stage by myself was really fascinating, and I kind of lifted the idea from Keith Jarrett's solo piano work. And I thought, well, what would it be like for a singer to be on stage by himself without a band, without any kind of accompaniment? And so I started working on that, you know. I worked on it for 6 years before I actually did my first solo voice concert. And that's become sort of the, you know, the root of the tree, actually, the tree trunk of everything else that I do.
That was Bobby McFerrin. He has a new album out in April called Vocabularies, his first in 8 years. We have an exclusive preview right now. Here's Wailers from Bobby McFerrin.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.